Requires no introduction, but I'd like to introduce to you Rabbi Silver. Thank you very much.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Just b'chavod Mar Dasra, to thank you to Rabbi Lin for inviting me back and having me here. It's always a wonderful part of my Yomim Nora in preparation. I don't remember what number year this is that we're doing this year. Three, four, fifth. Okay. Always a beautiful schos to be able to come to this side of town, to be able to share a little bit of Torah. I have the great schos every morning to have number of people from this side of town come to my side of town, and now Baruch Hashem, it's wonderful to come to this side of town to learn as well. We dedicate our learning tonight Le'ilu Nishmas Yichil Milchi Yehuda Ben Aryeh, in the hope and in the merit of our Talmud Torah, Nisham will have an Aliyah and the family in Nechama. You know, as the Rav just mentioned, by the time kind of we come to this time, just a few days before Yom Kippur, not even 2 days before Yom Kippur, so as the Rav mentioned, you heard of my friend, you heard a Shabbos Shiva drasha, probably in your respective kilas. I'm sure you've heard a number of different drashas over the course of Elul. There are, of course, the drashas of Rosh Hashanah. And so I feel like a little bit, that's like Mishehilcha Bohan Mushos. You know, now the question is, what am I going to be able to share with you that you haven't heard before? But then I realized that there's something incredible, which is I don't have to share with you any chidushim. It doesn't have to be anything novel or anything new. Because at the end of the day, the power of tshuva, and in general, the most beautiful and profound aspect of Yiddishkeit is that we are not the religion based on chidushim. We don't need novel ideas. We don't need panim chadoshos ba'alakan, new concepts, new theological or spiritual constructs that have never been heard before. Because the truth is, the things we really need to know in order to be successful in life are the things we already know. As the Ramchal writes, we're going to quote Ramchal a little bit over the course of the evening. As the Moshe Chaim Letzater writes in his introduction to Mesilas Yesharim, I'm not going to share with you any chidushim. There's no novel concepts in Mesilas Yesharim. Everything that the Mechaber says, you read it and you say, okay. Once he says it, I knew it. Or I should have known that. But says the Ramchal, sometimes we just have to be reminded about the things that we already know. Sometimes in life we need just a little bit of chazar. You know, I had a balabas who came over to me the other week. And he said, you know, Rabbi, you speak about the same thing every single week. I said, first of all, thank you for listening. Because for a balabas to say that, you know, Baruch Hashem, that he can keep track of what I say every single week. And I said, you know, you're 100% correct. I speak about the same thing every single week, or some variation of the same theme every week. Because at the end of the day, there are a couple of core concepts in Yiddishkeit that are absolutely fundamental to who we are, to what we are, and the process of our self-actualization. There are different ways to package it. There are different ways to present it. But the yesodos, the fundamentals, are the fundamentals. And so tonight I'd like to share with you a little bit of some of the fundamentals of tshuva. We begin with the Rambam. Sure, a short source sheet in front of you. The Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva writes as follows. Afa pisha tshuva v'atza'aka yafa liolam. Even though, again, it's always the season for tshuva. Even though, again, tshuva doesn't have a particular season that begins with Elul and ends on Matzah Yom Kippur, a Jew could always do tshuva. Kol yonatu HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always good. Ba'asara hayomim shebein Rosh Hashanah v'yom kippurim hu yafa bi'oser. In these 10 days, between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, is an especially auspicious time for tshuva. Umiskabeles himiyad sheneemar dirshu Hashem bihimatzo. And so the Rambam teaches us two fundamental concepts. Number one is that it is always the right time to do tshuva. It's a very important idea. Tshuva is not relegated to one part of the year, but tshuva is a process whenever I feel that I need to rehabilitate, whenever I feel that I have the need to restart. I always have that ability. You know, the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh says something so beautiful. He says in Musaf of Rosh Chodesh, we say, Rashi Chadoshim La'am Chonasata. Literally, again, beginning of new months you have given us. And the Baal Shem Tov says, why is it phrased in the plural? Why doesn't it just say, Rosh Chodesh La'am Chonasata? You've given us Rosh Chodesh. Why Rashi Chadoshim? Why plural? And the Baal Shem Tov says so beautifully, because Rosh Chodesh doesn't just come at the beginning of the month. Anytime you want the Rosh Chodesh, anytime you want a new start, Anytime you want a new beginning, anytime you want the blank slate, the tabula rasa, it's yours. It's yours for the taking. You can activate that koach anytime you want. Rosh Hashanah doesn't just come once a year. New beginnings aren't just dispensed one time per calendrical cycle. Whenever you want to start again, that opportunity is always there for you. And there's an inexhaustible supply of new beginnings. Therefore, says the Rambam, tshuva can be done anytime. Any time of the year. But despite that, these days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are especially auspicious for tshuva. That's fact number one. These days are auspicious for tshuva. How does that auspicious nature manifest itself? The Rambam says something startlingly amazing. He says, "Umiskabel simiyad." If you do sincere tshuva this time of year, it's accepted immediately. I guess you could infer from the Rambam that at other times of the year, perhaps tshuva is not accepted immediately. Perhaps there's a longer, more protracted process that one has to go through. But when you do tshuva during this time of year, number one, it's auspicious because God presents himself. God makes himself accessible in a way that he does not throughout the year, and it's immediately received. And so I think sometimes we get a little bit lost in the tshuva process. Why is that? I think sometimes we don't know where to begin. Meaning, if I sit down with myself and I take a look at all the things I have to fix, there's a lot of things I have to fix. And if I try to rank them, I try to prioritize them, they're all important and they're all necessary. And we all know a lot of times in life when you get a little overwhelmed by a particular process, what usually happens to most of us? Mamish, a group of tzaddikim here. Okay, fine, I'll be the Rasha. So I'll tell you, what usually happens to me, not to any of you, is you shut down. Usually, like when it just becomes too overwhelming, I don't know where to start. So for some reason, the way many of us are programmed is, when I don't know where to start, somehow my default becomes, don't start. If I don't know what to do, then don't do anything. If I don't know what goes at the top of the pyramid, so no point in starting the journey. And of course, when you say it, it sounds fundamentally counterintuitive. It doesn't make sense. But yet we know so many times in life, I know I have to move myself forward. I know I have a process to engage in. I know that I have things to do. I don't know where to start. And then tragically, I end up starting nowhere. I end up doing nothing. So what I'd like to try to frame a little bit tonight is a process to get started in the tshuva. And I know you're thinking, it's only a few days. It's only a few days before Yom Kippur. I'm sure we've all started doing tshuva. Well, if you've started, fantastic. If you haven't started, it's okay, because there's still plenty of time. Yesh kana olama b'sha'achas. All you need is one moment of pure tshuva to change your life. So tonight we're going to try to create a little bit of a framework for the rehabilitative, cathartic process of tshuva. What does tshuva mean? In order to avoid getting overwhelmed by the process and not knowing where to start, let's try to frame a couple of different starting points. And I'd like to really embed this in a pasuk in Parashas Ki Seitze. The Torah says in number 2, Ki Seitze l'milchama aleivecha. So the pasuk says, when you go out to war against your enemies, U'nisano Hashem alokecha b'yadecha v'shavisa shivyo. Literally, again, Hashem will deliver your enemies into your hands. V'shavisa shivyo. And literally translated, you will take captives. You're familiar with this particular section. The Torah here happens to be talking about the very strange and somewhat difficult to understand halachas of Yifas Toar, the war bride. We're not going to get into the technicalities of the Yifas Toar, the war bride, tonight. Instead, what I want to focus on is as follows. When one looks through the Svarim HaKadosh, when one looks throughout Hasidic literature, one will find that the pasuk is viewed as an incredible metaphor. Ki seitze la milchama olayvecha. When you will go out to war against your enemies. Who's the enemy? And if you take a look at number 3, the Yitav Lev was the Rav of Siget, the beginning of the Satmar dynasty. So the Yitav Lev writes as follows. He says, Ki seitze la milchama aleivecha, ze yetzer hara. Ze yetzer hara. The oyev, the enemy that we all have to combat, that's our evil inclination. And you know, of course, just I know you know this, but it's important to say, you know, when we speak about the evil inclination, the yetzer hara, So it's not like a little man in a red suit with a pitchfork who stands, you know, on my shoulder, whispering in my ear to do averus. We don't believe in that. The Yetzer Hara are the internal self-sabotaging mechanisms that we all have to deal with. You ever have a situation in life where for some reason you pull the rug out from under yourself? Something doesn't go right. Something just hits a dead end. And I look at it and I say, why did this happen? And I realize I did it to myself. I sabotaged myself. I prevented myself from going. That's the Yetzer Hara. The internal self-sabotaging mechanisms that each of us possess, that each of us must combat, that's Yetzer Hara. So therefore, says the Yitzhak Leif, Ki seitzei lemilchama aleivecha. What am I going out to war against? I'm going out to war against my Yetzer Hara, against my internal self-sabotaging mechanisms, against the negative desires, the proclivities, the predispositions that try to derail me in life. And what happens? Torah tells us, "Unisano shem lokecha biyadecha, ki birshus ha'adam lahatos yadav uklei amasa l'chol hasheyachpots." So Rebbe says something amazing. He says the Torah gives us a guarantee. If you're really willing to wage the war, if you're really willing to fight, if you're willing to roll up your sleeves and do the necessary work, you will be successful. You know, it's interesting because there's no guarantee for anything in life. I find it sometimes when I meet with like chassanim and kallahs, it seems to be the most popular question young people, I'm old enough to say young people now, right? That young people have is, how do I know it's going to really work? I'm like, I don't know. You know, if you figure that out, it's an incredible thing. People want to know, they want guarantees of success. And you have to explain to people that sometimes the biggest decision you have to make in life has absolutely no guarantee of success. And the truth is, it's not just marriage, it's not just relationships, it's true with your career, it's true with anything. There are no guarantees of success anywhere in life, except in one place. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us, Ki seitzei lemilchama al aivecha. If you're really willing to do battle, if you're really willing to do war, if you're really willing to combat those internal self-sabotaging mechanisms, those predispositions, those proclivities, those desires that derail you, there is guaranteed success for those who are really willing to engage in the battle. But then the Rebbe says something incredible. Vishavisa shivyo. So we translate vishavisa shivyo as, you'll take a captive. You'll take a captive. The Yitav Leib looks at it a little bit differently. Look at number 3, 4 lines in, Vishavisav Shivyo, 5 lines in, Hu HaLev, Hanishba Lebein Hazarin. The Yitav Leib understands Vishavisav Shivyo doesn't mean you'll take captives. Vishavisav Shivyo means you will retake captives or you will emancipate or free captives. When you go out to war against the enemy, when you're really willing to wage battle against your Yetzer Hara, then you are going to free that which was taken captive. What was taken captive, says the Rebbe? Hu HaLev. My heart. My heart often gets taken captive throughout the journey of life. We are all good. We are all tzaddikim. We all start out precious, pure, spiritually luminescent. We all start out great. But then stuff happens throughout the journey of life. And I go out to battle. And sometimes, to be honest, I don't try hard enough. And I lose my battles. And not only do I lose the battle against the enemy, but ultimately my heart, my soul, my essence is taken captive by forces that are negative. Is taken captive by forces outside of me that derail all of my life aspirations and dreams. And therefore, says the Yitav Leif, what the Pasuk is telling us is, find the courage to do battle against the Oyev. Find the battle to do war against, to go to war against your Yetzara, against those internal self-sabotaging mechanisms. And when you will do that, you will liberate the captive. Who's the captive? You'll liberate your heart. You see, we often think that tshuva is the process of acquiring good. Tshuva is not a process of acquiring good. Tshuva is a process of reinstating our natural disposition of being tzaddikim. Our natural disposition, our default, is that we are righteous. our default. You know, I was on Shabbos night in shul. There was a little boy who was waiting online to say good Shabbos. And I said good Shabbos, and his name is Natanel. I said, Natanel, I said, tell me, he's maybe 4, 5, 6 years old. I said, what, did you do tshuva? I said, did you do tshuva? See, he thought about it. He said, yes. I said, tell me, what did you do tshuva for? He thought about it again. He said, the truth is, I don't have anything to do tshuva for. But I did it just in case. And I said, I am so jealous of you. Because he was telling the MS, that's the truth. You know, there are people in this world, we were all like this once upon a time, where there was nothing to do tshuva for. There was nothing to do tshuva for. It sounds strange to even say that. We're all a group of tzaddikim, nashim, tzidkaniyos, we're all wonderful. But I venture to say that there's not one person here tonight who doesn't have something they have to do tshuva for. But it's important to remember that each and every one of us, once upon a time, was in that state where literally if someone were to ask us, do you have to do tshuva? I could have said, no, nothing. I'm white as snow. I'm clean. I'm pure. I'm totally fine. That was our state. And that state of being still exists somewhere inside of us. Just the challenge of life is that often the heart and the soul are taken captive by forces outside of us. Forces either that we let into our lives or forces that ultimately pull us out into all types of negative circumstances. And tshuva, says the Yitav Lev, is finding the courage to go out to battle, to do war with your demons, and free your heart. Free your heart. You don't have to acquire great tools in order to become righteous. You just have to free your lev. And if you free your heart, and if you free your soul, then you are back to that pure, pristine, spiritually luminescent state. And so the fundamental question, of course, becomes, how do I recapture my heart? It sounds beautiful, sounds wonderful. But what is the process for recapturing the lev? What is the process? What's the strategy for going out to war, combating the demons, and recapturing and freeing my heart? So I'd like to suggest three different approaches. Three different parts of this battle plan that I think are necessary for all of us. The application of which, you know, the order, I'm not giving it any specific order. Maybe the order changes from person to person. This is just how I approach it. The Sfas Emes points out something amazing. I'm going to read to you one line. The Ger Rebbe, he says, Hatshuva tzricha liyos hein al masim ra'im v'hein al machshavos ra'os. So the first two parts of our battle plan, the first two parts of the war strategy, says the Sfas Emes, is that a person has to do tshuva on maisim ra'im, negative behaviors, and our negative thoughts. We all have negative behaviors. We all have things that we just do wrong, or things that we're not vigilant enough about, or things that need to be tweaked, or things that need to be changed, or things that need to be eliminated. Behavioral modification. There are behaviors I have to modify. Fill in the blank. We're not going to go around the room here. Right? Fill in the blank. Whatever each of us, I know I have to rectify. I have to stop talking during davening. I have to stop speaking Lashon Hara. I have to be better with my Shemir Shabbos. What? Fill in the blank. Behaviors. So behavioral modification is something we understand. We condition ourselves all the time to change our behaviors. Remember again, anyone who's a parent knows that behavioral conditioning is the most important thing that a parent could do for their children. If my child, chas v'shalom, runs across the street without going ahead and looking, I don't know what parents do today. It used to be you got a patch. I don't know, maybe it's not in vogue anymore. Right, now maybe we talk about it. How does it make you feel to run across the street? And I said, whatever, whether you're going to do it, there has to be a repercussion. Because a child has to understand that at the end of the day, you can't do this. And they have to associate, ultimately, the running across the street with some type of repercussion. Behavioral conditioning is something we begin as children and carries through our adult lives as well. That, says the Sfas Emes, is the tshuva al hamaisim. The Rambam discusses this. Remember again, the Rambam in the second chapter of Hilchos Tshuva writes, Ezehi bal tshuva gimura. The Rambam says, what is an absolute about tshuva? What's the highest rung being about tshuva? Remember what does the Rambam say? I committed an avera, and then I'm placed in the same exact situation, but this time I don't commit the avera. You know what that's called? Behavioral conditioning. The first time I acted a certain way, a negative way, and now I refine my behaviors so I act differently. But then the Sasemis talks about tshuva al machshavos raos. Tshuva for negative thoughts. And a lot of times when we hear this, we often think that it refers just to illicit, immoral, inappropriate thoughts, which of course it does, no question, that's part of this as well. But I think what the Sas MS is also highlighting is something dramatically different. You see, throughout the journey of life, we create cognitive constructs, which is that we create realities for ourselves in which we see the world in a certain way, we see ourselves in a certain way, we see others in a certain way. Those constructs are created for a variety of different reasons. A simple example would be that at the end of the day, if I have a negative run-in with someone, this happens all the time, I have a negative interaction with someone, someone was especially mean to me, not nice to me. So what's going to happen the next time I have an interaction with that person? What's going to happen? The person could say the most innocuous thing, and what's going to happen? What a jerk. What a jerk. I can't. Did you hear what he just said? Yeah, he said good morning. Yeah, but did you see how he said good morning? He didn't say good morning. He said good morning. Why doesn't he say it with his lavos? Why doesn't he say it with excitement? Why doesn't he say it like he said? Because what happened? I have my cognitive construct. I see that person in a certain way. And we do this all the time in life. We have relationships, negative relationships, that soured because of one particular event. And the olam va'ed, I will view the perpetrator of that negative event through a negative lens. It doesn't make a difference what he says, what she says, how they say it. I will always view them that way. What about ourselves? How many of us walk through life feeling like failures? No one ever really articulates this because it's too haunting to say the words. But so many people walk through life feeling like abysmal failures. Why? Because they failed. Because some people are unable to rebound from failure. Some people are unable to get back up after they have fallen. And so they internalize that sense of failure and look at themselves just as one big heap of failure. And they can't get over that. That's their cognitive construct for themselves. And how many people are just sour on life? Just sour on life. Always waiting for the next shoe to drop. Always waiting for the next thing to go wrong. Where does a person develop that mindset from? Because if a person encounters multiple setbacks, successive setbacks, there are some people for whom they feel in life nothing ever goes right. So if I don't feel that life goes right for me, why should I have an expectation that anything will be any different in the future? Says the Sfas Emes. Part of tshuva is what he calls tshuva al machshavos raos. Machshavos raos doesn't just mean immoral, illicit, inappropriate thoughts. Tshuva on ma'asim, machshavos raos also means remaking negative cognitive constructs. You know, sometimes the most difficult thing is to be able to take a step back and to be able to say, just because I perceive things this way does not mean that it's correct. The courage to challenge your fundamental ability to perceive reality. Maybe I don't perceive reality as it is. Maybe my perception is not correct. Maybe my perception of my friend is not correct. Maybe my perception of myself is not correct. And maybe my perception of life is not correct. Do you know how many of us are being held back in life from accomplishing great things? Not because of anyone else, not because of anything else, but because we walk through life with the wrong cognitive constructs. Because you've been thinking a certain way from the time that we were 20, 30, whatever age, and that's just the way we keep on trucking, keep going. What about taking a step back and saying, one second, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the way I view my fellow Jew, maybe the way I view myself, maybe the way I view life is not correct. Maybe the cognitive construct that I'm operating with is too limiting and holding me back, and I need the courage to look at life a little bit differently. You know, Stephen Covey, I'm sure you've heard of him, the author of Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, writes about the concept of a paradigm shift. It's a phrase, I don't know if he coined it or not, but he certainly did an incredible amount of research and speaks about it extensively. And I want to read to you an excerpt from his book that I think is incredible, where he speaks about the concept of paradigm shift. He says, I remember a mini paradigm shift I experienced one Sunday morning on a subway in New York. People were sitting quietly, some reading newspapers, some lost in thought, some resting with their eyes closed. It was a calm, peaceful scene. Then suddenly a man and his children entered the subway car. The children were so loud and rambunctious that instantly the whole climate changed. The man sat down next to me and closed his eyes, apparently oblivious to the situation. The children were yelling back and forth, throwing things, even grabbing people's papers. It was very disturbing, yet the man sitting next to me did nothing. It was difficult not to feel irritated. I could not believe that he could be so insensitive as to let his children run wild like that and do nothing about it, taking no responsibility at all. It was easy to see that everyone else on the subway felt irritated too. So finally, with what I felt was unusual patience and restraint, I turned to him and said, "Sir, your children are really disturbing a lot of people. I wonder if you couldn't control them a little bit more." The man lifted his gaze as if to come to a consciousness of the situation for the first time and said softly, "Oh, you're right. I guess I should do something about it. We just came from the hospital where their mother died about an hour ago. I don't know what to do or think, and I guess they don't know how to handle it either." Covey writes, "Can you imagine what I felt at that moment? My paradigm shifted. Suddenly I saw things differently. And because I saw differently, I thought differently, I felt differently, I behaved differently. My irritation vanished. I didn't have to worry about controlling my attitude or my behavior. My heart was filled with the man's pain. Feelings of sympathy and compassion flowed freely. Your wife just died? I am so sorry. What can I do to help?" Everything changed in an instant. You see, we go through life and we think that we've got it all figured out. I've got myself figured out. I've got my fellow figured out. I've got life figured out. And we go through life with these paradigms that we establish. And sometimes they're wrong. And sometimes they're flawed. And so every once in a while, a person has to have enough courage to take a step back and to say, "I know this is how I view everything, but is my perception correct?" I heard a great story by Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson. He told a story about a young man who was looking for a job. And he saw a wanted ad in the paper for the local Native American tribe was looking for a chief. So the young man figured, you know what do I have to lose? I'll submit my resume, I'll go ahead, and maybe I'll become the chief. So he goes for the prabha, it goes very well, a little rain dance, a little this, he does the whole thing, he gets the job. Mamish, he's the new chief. It's fall, winter's approaching, the elders of the tribe come to the new chief, they say, "Chief, what is the winter going to be like?" See, what they didn't tell him at the interview at the prabha was that as part of the duties of the chief, is that you have to tell the tribe what the winter is going to be like, because they have to prepare. So the chief doesn't know what to do. He says, "Oh, it's going to be cold. It's going to be cold." They said, "Okay, cold. What should we do?" He said, "Gather firewood. Gather firewood." Okay, they begin to gather firewood. The guy, the new chief, begins to schwitz a little bit because he realizes that now the responsibility for the continuity of the tribe to make it through the winter is on him. So he has a great idea. He's going to call up the National Weather Agency, right? He calls them up. He says, "Tell me, what is the winter going to be like?" They say, "Oh, it's going to be very cold." Fantastic. He goes back to the elders. "The winter is going to be very cold. Make sure to gather even more wood." A couple of weeks go by, makes another call to the National Weather Agency. "Tell me, what is the weather going to be like?" So they tell him, "The truth is, it's going to be exceptionally cold." Goes back to the tribe. "It's going to be exceptionally cold. Gather more wood." A couple of weeks go by. Calls back to the weather agency one last time before winter. "Tell me, what is the winter going to be like?" They said, "Sir, this looks like it's going to be the coldest winter on record. So the chief says, can I ask you an honest question? Talking to the operator of the National Weather Agency. He says, tell me, how do you know with such precision that it is going to be the coldest winter on record? And the guy from the National Weather Agency says, the truth is, between me and you, we have no idea what we're talking about. But the Indians are collecting firewood like crazy. You see, my friends, sometimes what we don't realize is that we create cognitive constructs for ourselves. We look at the world a certain way, and because we impose our vision on the world, we make everything else fit into that. And sometimes the way we look at the world is just plain out wrong. Sometimes we look at ourselves as shivrei kelim, as broken utensils, but we're not. We're good people. We're righteous people. Maybe we have made some mistakes. Maybe we have made some significant mistakes, but good people nevertheless. The way we look at other people in our lives, maybe people who have wronged us, and because someone wronged us once, or because someone mistreated us once, we write them off forever. Or because life hasn't gone my way, then nothing will ever go my way. We walk around life with these flawed cognitive constructs. And as a result, we create glass ceilings for ourselves. We limit ourselves. We stunt ourselves. We stymie our growth. And therefore, says the Sfas Emes, if you want to go to war with your Yetzer Hara, your first two parts of the battle is number one, is tshuva al ma'asim ra'im, behavioral adjustments. If there are behaviors that I'm doing wrong, I have to change them. I have to address them. You know, again, Chazal speak about this all of the time, that to try to perfect myself while still maintaining negative behaviors, Chazal say is like tovel v'sheretz biyado. It's like immersing in a mikvah while still holding on to the source of impurity. Behavioral modification, behavioral adjustments are the absolute first step in tshuva. But the second step is tshuva al machshavos raos. And again, not just on the immoral, illicit thoughts. We know that already. But tshuva al machshavos raos, the worst machshavos raos are not the immoral, illicit thoughts. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows us. And He knows our frailties. And He knows our limitations. And He knows that we are carnal beings, sometimes derailed by our wants and our passions. The worst thoughts that we have are not the immoral and illicit ones. The worst thoughts are the flawed cognitive constructs, because those are the ones that stunt us in every area in life. Step number one, tshuva amasim, behavioral tshuva. Step number two, cognitive tshuva. Having the courage to take a step back. Look at what you believe. Look at how you view life and ask yourself, is this really accurate, or does it have to be adjusted? Another step. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, says something amazing. He actually comments on this pasuk in Kiseitze, where the Torah discusses Kiseitze lemelch, the pasuk that we're quoting, Kiseitze lemelchama aleivecha, when you will go out to war against your enemy. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe, like I mentioned before, like you find in most Hasidic literature, understands that the oyev, that the enemy over here, is the Yetzer Hara. And the Torah again is talking about going out to war against your internal evil inclinations, self-sabotaging mechanisms. But the Lubavitcher Rebbe says something amazing. You're familiar with the first Rashi on the Parsha of Kiseitze. And what does Rashi say? Kiseitze la milchama alevech, when you will go out to war against your enemy. Be'eza milchama hakasuv medaber. What type of war is the Torah describing? And what does Rashi say? Milchames Rishus. See, for the Jewish army, there are two types of wars. There's a Milchames Mitzvah, an obligatory war, and Milchames Rishus, an optional war. David HaMelech waged many optional wars just for the sake of territorial conquest. The war with Amalek is an obligatory war. So the Bavitcher asked such a simple, fundamental question. If the Torah is describing to me over here the war against the Yetzer Hara, which is the fundamental war that every Jew has to wage, which is the battle that I have to wage day in and day out, the behavioral battle, the cognitive battle, then why does the Torah mention this in the context of optional war? Should this not be mentioned in the context of obligatory war? And here the Rebbe says something absolutely amazing. Essentially, he explains, not everyone feels ready to confront their demons. Sometimes there are things that I'm lugging around inside that I am just not ready to deal with. I'm just not ready to confront. A lot of us carry around baggage that's been with us for years. You know, in the world of baggage, there are some people who, Baruch Hashem, just get by with a little carry-on. Some people use their full baggage allowance. And some people have to hire a porter. You know, that guy with the big hand truck. And he's following me wherever I go in life. Because there's a whole bunch of baggage that is following me wherever I go. Baggage from my childhood, baggage from my upbringing, baggage from my marriage, baggage from my kids, baggage from my career, baggage. A lot of us have a lot of baggage. And so, of course, the goal is check your baggage, right? The goal, I mentioned this, you know, you ever, I often find this happens if I'm traveling with my family. You know, sometimes when you're traveling with your family, you know, and the euphoria of the family trip wears off about 3 minutes in, right? After you've packed the car and you're already schwitzing and you're wondering to yourself, oh my gosh, what is this going to be? And then what happens? You get on the plane, and then of course comes the incredible adventure of figuring out where to put all the luggage and the overhead baggage. And you know, you see that person who's just walking by with their little carry-on, and they're okay, and they're all happy and mamish. You want to give them every klala under the sun, right? But you know, it's such an incredible metaphor for life. You know how happy that person looks? They're just going to go. There's like a little tiny cow. It's like a Ziploc bag on wheels. They're just going to fold it up. They're going to put it over here. They take off their jacket, fold it up. They put on their earphones, and they fall asleep. They say, wow, what a way to travel. My dear friends, it's an incredible metaphor for life. Some people are always looking for overhead compartments. Some people are always looking, where am I going to put my luggage? The car is not big enough. The house is not big enough. Nowhere is big enough, and I'm always schlepping it. And there are some people who, Baruch Hashem, find a way to dispose of the luggage. Everybody carries around something. But what a mechaya to just walk around life with a little suitcase, with a little tiny carry-on that you could just put away, 1, 2, 3, and move on with your life. The goal of life, of course, is to deal with your baggage. Healthy people at some point in time have to deal with their baggage. At some point in time, I have to unpack all of the stuff I'm schlepping around. But says the Rebbe, sometimes I just can't do it now. So I just can't do it now. I know I've got the baggage. I've been schlepping it around for 30 years. I know I have it. I know I have to unpack it. I know I have to stow it. I know I have to get rid of it. I can't do it now. So what do I do if I can't deal with my baggage right now? So the Rebbe says, you can bombard yourself with positivity. You see, at some point in time, I have to deal with the baggage. But if I don't yet feel able to deal with it, tshuva is not off limits to me. There's a different form of tshuva. See, the Rebbe says, "Ki seitzei la'milchama alei vecha." When you go out war against Yetzirah, it's a milchames reshus. It's an optional war. Everybody has to wage it at some point in time, but maybe you're not ready to wage it just yet. So if I'm not ready to wage it just yet, then what do I do? Bombard yourself with positivity. Sometimes if you can't unpack and deal with the negativity that's holding you down, flood your life with positive influences. Flood your life with Torah. Flood your life with chesed. Flood your life with mitzvahs. Now I want to be clear, it's a band-aid. Because at some point in time, you're going to have to check your baggage. At some point in time, you have to unpack all of the suitcases. But if you're not ready to do it just yet, says the Rebbe, fine, then at that stage in life, tshuva for you is bombarding yourself with positivity. If it's too difficult to go to war with the Yetzirah, then what you could do is essentially deprive it of oxygen. You see, when you bombard your life with positivity, there's no room, there's no spiritual oxygen for anything negative to exist. If I fill my life with meaningful things, do you know, most times when people get themselves into trouble in life, do you know what the biggest problem is? The biggest problem is they have too much time on their hands. Free time is the enemy of the Jew. The truth is, it's the enemy of mankind. Nothing good ever happens in free time. Nothing good ever happens when you have time on your hands. Clinical tests have shown, right? Free time, statistical probability is you will do something you will regret. Doesn't mean that a person, of course, has to have downtime, of course. But even your downtime, even your relaxation time has to be structured. Has to have a tochen, has to have a purpose, has to have a beginning, has to have an end, and has to have something meaningful that fills it. Says the Rebbe, something absolutely amazing. If you're not in the stage of life where you're able to go to war against your Yetzer Hara, then fill your days with positivity. If you have time, then figure out a way to plug it with something meaningful and something positive. And we all know this. We all know this. If I spend my time doing something good, you know, I have this discussion with my boys. My boys are in base med, and very strong. And I tell them, they're tired of hearing it already, but I tell them, I don't understand why Ben Azman is so long. I said, I've never heard of this, that young men have weeks on their hands. I grew up a little bit more modern than my kids. So I don't understand. Who needs 2 weeks? What are you even going to do? What are you going to do with yourself? How are you going to... So they get annoyed because Tati, we need time to relax. I said, relax from what? what is it that you need to relax from? Your Zoche Baruch Hashem to go... You have to be purposeful. Okay, Ben Azmanim is fantastic. What are you doing with your Ben Azmanim? What are you doing? How are you filling the time? How are you maximizing? How are you being purposeful? And if it's true for Yeshiva Bachrim, Alachas Kama Vakama, it is true for us who are in the world and who are bombarded by a whole variety of different influences. Says the Lubavitcher Rebbe, if you can't go to war with your Yetzirah, if you can't do battle yet, it's okay. Not everybody is able to do battle in any given time. Fill your life with meaning. Because if you don't fill the voids with meaning, other stuff will fill it. Materialism will fill it. There's nothing wrong with enjoying material things. It just can't become the be-all and end-all of my life. There's nothing wrong with having a nice quality of life. But it can't be my ultimate goal and aspiration. My life has to be filled with other things. Strategy number 3 in the war against the Yetzer Hara is, if I can't go to war, then says Lubavitcher, it's Mechames Rishus. If you can do it, great. If you can't do it, then make sure to fill your life with incredible positivity. Step number 4. If you take a look at source number 4 on your sheet. So there's amazing Gemara Maseches Yuma. The Gemara says, Rabbi Zeira, ki havi le milsa bahadi inish, have chalif fatani la kameo mamtzile. So this is an incredible story. Rabbi Zeira, when he used to get into an argument with someone, this is absolutely amazing. When he used to get into an argument with someone, so what would happen? Rabbi Zeira would make himself available to the person with whom he got into the argument with. So just so you understand this. This is just so you understand the context here. When someone offended Rabbi Zeira was the aggrieved party. When someone hurt him, Rabbi Zeira would make sure to kind of always be around that person. Why? To give the person the opportunity to apologize. To give the person the opportunity to apologize. The Gemara tells a story. So that this way, if the person, the perpetrator, would see Rabbi Zeira, and he's right there, they would be motivated to apologize. Rav, Rav once had a particular argument with a butcher. And the butcher did not come to apologize. The butcher wronged Rav, and the butcher didn't come to apologize. B'ma'ale yoma de kipuri, amar ihu, Ezel ana lefeyuse le. And ultimately, again, so it's amazing. So what did Rav do on Erev Yom Kippur? The butcher had still not come to ask forgiveness. So what does Rav do? He goes and he finds the butcher. He doesn't say anything to the butcher. He just shows up, walks around, shalom aleichem. Okay, happy to you, the butcher didn't apologize in this story. It's not such a great story. But you understand the point, right? The point over here is you see these incredible episodes of Rav and Rabbi Zeira. Even though they were the aggrieved party, right? They were the aggrieved party. At the end of the day, they made themselves available to the perpetrators so that the perpetrator ultimately, again, should apologize. And if you look at number 6, the Noam Megadim writes so beautifully. He quotes over here the pasuk from Yeshaya, and he essentially explains that at the end of the day, when the pasuk says "Ve'el Elokinu kiyar be'lesloach," if you, I'm sorry, look at number 5 for just a moment. The pasuk says "Yazov Rasha Darko Vish Aven Machshavosav." So literally, the wicked shall give up his way, the man of iniquity his thoughts. V'yashav El Hashem v'yirachameu Ve'el Elokinu kiyar be'lesloach. And ultimately, again, he shall return to the Lord who shall have mercy upon him and to our God, for he will freely pardon. So the Noam Megadim points out something amazing. The Yashav El Hashem V'Yarachameh Yudkei Vavkei is the name of God which refers to the divine attribute of mercy, of kindness. So ultimately, the God of kindness always forgives, always has rachamim. The El Elokeinu, Elokeinu is Midas Hadin, strict attribute of justice. The strict attribute of justice also forgives when? Ki yar belisloach. The Noam Megadim says yar belisloach means when I easily forgive, when I forgive those who hurt me, when I go ahead and mochel those who have hurt me, ki yar belisloach, when I am marbe in the slicha that I dispense, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even God's strict attribute of justice, forgives me as well. There's an incredible story that's told about a chassid who once came to the Noam Elimelech. And he said, he came to the Noam Elimelech on Erev Yom Kippur. He said, Rebbe, I came, or maybe the day before, I think it was the evening of Erev Yom Kippur. And he said, Rebbe, I came here because I want to do kaparis with you. I came to do kaparis with the Rebbe. So the Noam Elimelech tells this chassid, he says, if you really want to see kaparis, you should go to the home of Reb Yaakov the innkeeper. Yaakov the innkeeper is known as a simple Jew, but for some reason, Noam Elimelech said to the chassid, if you really want to see kaparis, go to the home of Rabbi Yaakov the innkeeper. The chassid is intrigued. Rabbi Yaakov was not known as one of the more pious chassidim, was a simple Jew, but he goes at night, and he looks through the window of the inn, and he sees something amazing. He sees Rabbi Yaakov sitting at the table, and he hears Rabbi Yaakov call to his wife and ask her to bring him a ledger, a notebook. He opens up the notebook, and amazingly enough, this Rabbi Yaakov kept a running journal, a log, of every Avera he committed throughout the year. Every Avera. The date, the time, and the type. Right? Brief description. Right? Everything. Every Avera recorded. This was his journal. This was his log of Cheshbon HaNefesh. So Yaakov opens up the ledger. He reads through line by line by line, and he begins to cry. He says, Ribono Shel Olam, I'm so sorry. I know I promised you that last year I'm going to be better. I know I promised you that the Averas that I did last year will be the last year, and this year will be a different, and I'm sorry. I repeated so many of the same mistakes, and I committed a whole host of new mistakes. But then he goes ahead and he asks his wife to bring a second ledger, a second notebook. She brings the second notebook. She sits down next to her husband. And Rabbi Yaakov opens up the notebook and he begins to read. And this one also has dates. It says, on the 7th of Cheshvan, our only cow died. We relied on that cow for milk. We relied on that cow for sustenance. That cow was part of our parnasa. And on the 7th of Cheshvan, the cow died. On the 20th of Shvat, I went out to the forest to go ahead and gather wood for a poor Jew. And I was beaten up by a group of peasants. And on the 3rd of Tammuz, our little Sarla, our beautiful daughter who we waited for so many years, passed away. And Rabbi Yaakov and his Rebbetzin begin to sob. And that moment, Rabbi Yaakov says, so the Ribbono Shel Olam calls out, he says, Ata lo chayiv li, eini chayiv lach. Kadosh Baruch Hu, I'll make you a deal. I don't owe you anything, and you don't own me anything. He takes the two ledgers, waves them over his head, and says, Zeh Chalifasi, Zeh Timurasi, Zeh Kaparasi, and throws the ledgers into the fire. This was the Kaparas of Rabbi Yaakov the innkeeper. The Noam Elimelech was trying to teach his chassid an incredible lesson. There's a power in forgiveness. Because a lot of times in life when we hold grudges, whether they're grudges against another person, they're grudges sometimes against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, we don't like to articulate it. Sometimes it feels awkward for us to say it. But a lot of times you hold grudges against Hashem. And I want to tell you something, it's okay. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has thick skin. He's okay with your grudges. He's okay with your grudges as long as you keep talking to him. But a lot of times we go through life and we hold grudges against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I don't understand. Do I ask that much of you? Do I ask you for the craziest brachas? I ask you for simple brachas, like healthy children, like shalom bayis, like a regular parnasa, regular brachas, that I would expect everything that I do for you, that you would give me those brachas. And sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't give us the brachos as we would like to have them. He doesn't deliver as we would like to have the blessings delivered. So we hold grudges. And sometimes we hold grudges against ourselves because we're angry at ourselves for failures. We're angry at ourselves because I'm not in life where I want to be. And we walk through life with a series of grudges against ourselves, against others, and against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the power of Yom Kippur is the ability to engage in true forgiveness. Do you know why forgiveness is such a big part of it? It's always fascinating to me, right? It's incredible. You know, how many emails do you get on Erev Yom Kippur, right? For asking for mechila, which just in and of itself is so ridiculous, right? If I by any chance offend, and by the way, it's usually a BCC, right? So who knows on the email, right? But I'm a tzaddik, I'm doing tshuva, so I haven't spoken to you for 52 years, but it's okay, I'm asking you for mechila. Why the urgency, right? Why did Chazal place such a focus on Mechila on Erev Yom Kippur? Because you know what forgiveness is? We all know this. When you hold a grudge against someone or something, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that grudge holds you back. That grudge stunts you. You know, Rabbi Tversky has a beautiful line. He says, you know, when you hold a grudge, it's like allowing someone to live in your head rent-free. Right? The person, they don't care. They're going on with their life. Me, I'm seething. I'm angry. And it's righteous indignation. Okay? And for me, every day I think about it. Every moment I think about it. Or every other day I think about it. And how much energy it consumes. And how many of my kochos it consumes. And how much it turns me into the kind of person I don't want to be. Forgiveness takes a role on Yom Kippur, Yomim Noraim. Because when you learn to forgive, you learn the art of letting go. And all of us hold on to things which keep us rooted and tethered to a present mediocrity. We hold ourselves back from self-actualizing. We hold ourselves back from accomplishing great things. So when you learn the art of mechila, when you learn the art of forgiveness, forgiving the other, forgiving God, and forgiving yourself, you are able to move forward. If you want to know how to wage battle against the Yetzirah, let go of the things that are holding you back. See, the grudges are just the beginning. See, you know what the goal of Erev Yom Kippur really is? As you're making your Mechila phone calls and hopefully granting Mechila to whoever asks you for it, you're letting go. And the moment you begin to let go of the animosity you feel towards someone else is the moment you ask yourself the million-dollar question. What else is holding me back in life? What else is holding me back? You know, there's the beautiful insight. I want to say that it's the Kotzker, but I'm not sure. So when Moshe Rabbeinu came to the Sneh, I mentioned this at the Project Inspire Shabbos. When Moshe Rabbeinu was at the Sneh, by the burning bush, so he comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who says, Shal na'alecha me'araglecha, which literally translated means take your shoes off. And the Kotzker says so beautifully, Na'al doesn't just mean shoe. Na'al also means a lock. A lock. Lin'o means to close, and na'al means a lock. Shal na'alecha me'araglecha. All of us are shackled to something. And when you're shackled, you can't move. When you're shackled, you can't progress. When you're shackled, you can't advance. Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe, you want to be great? Unshackle yourself. Shal na'alecha mi'araglech, and move yourself forward. The concept of mechila, of granting forgiveness, means right now I harbor animosity. I harbor a grudge. And that grudge holds me back. That grudge is my ball and chain around my ankle that keeps me tethered to my present mediocrity. But when I forgive, I let go. And when I forgive, that reminds me of all the other things that are holding me back also. And if I have the power to forgive you for what you did wrong to me, and if I have the power to forgive HaKadosh Baruch Hu for not coming through in the ways I feel He should have come through for me, and if I have the power to forgive myself for underperforming and not living up to my own expectations, then I have the power to assess my life and identify all the other things that are holding me back and let those go as well. That's the power of forgiveness. So if we bring this all together, and with this I'll close, it turns out that although you could do tshuva throughout the entire year, it is the tshuva that we do during these 10 days that is incredibly powerful, incredible holy, and as the Rambam says, is accepted immediately. It's a tshuva that's accomplished by going to war with our Yetzirah. For what purpose? Why are we going to war? As you saw, the Itav Lev said, to free the heart. My heart has been enslaved and my heart has been ensnared by forces that are outside of me. I want to free my heart. I want to free my purity. I want to reclaim my beautiful, spiritual, and holy self. And how do we do that? Four ways. Step number one, behavioral tshuva of the Sfas Emes. Step number two, cognitive tshuva of the Sfas Emes. Challenging the cognitive constructs and recognizing that at the end of the day, just because I think it's a certain way does not mean that it's really that way. To find the courage sometimes to undergo a paradigm shift. Number three, if I'm unable to go to war because I'm just not ready to unpack the baggage yet, bombard yourself with positivity. Fill your life with kiddusha. Fill your life with holiness. Fill your life with dynamic spiritual activity. And if you do that, then by definition, the Yetzirah, the negativity, has no oxygen to breathe. Starve it out. If you fill the void with goodness and holiness, then the evil and negativity has no place to exist. And number four, forgiveness. Find the courage to forgive the other. Find the courage to forgive HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Find the courage to forgive yourself. Find the courage to identify the things that are holding you back. And find the ultimate courage to let them go and move forward. We should be zocha in these days between now and Yom Kippur. And again, I can't say enough. It's not just through Yom Kippur. You know, remember, we have until Hoshana Rabbah. And if you need a little bit more time, you have until Shemini Atzeres. And if you're a good chassid, you have until Chanukah. And if you're exceptionally pious, until Tu B'Shvat. And then, of course, the Sfarim bring down that Pesach is also auspicious for tshuva. And then, of course, tshuva, of course, Shivasar B'Tamuz, the 3 weeks. And then Baruch Hashem, it's already Chodesh Elul. So you see, it's always ripe time for tshuva. But no time is like the present. We should be Zochem Yeretz Hashem to internalize these lessons, to live these lessons. And in that Sechos, we, together with our Mishpachos, together with our community, and together with all of Am Yisrael, should be inscribed for a Gemar Chasima Tova. Yeah.